It's Friday, April the 28th, 2017. You're moving at the speed of creativity with Wesley Fryer, narrowcasting from Oklahoma City, Oklahoma. Well, good afternoon, and welcome to a belated podcast on Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcasts. I have been podcasting on almost a weekly basis for the last year with Jason Neifer, a friend and fellow educator from Missoula, Montana, on our EdTech Situation Room web show and podcast. But I have definitely not been publishing as much on this channel, and I want to assure you that I have no desire to become a pod fader and discontinue podcasting here, and probably as we are nearing, you know, the summer months, going to be sharing some additional podcasts here. So I want to thank you so much for tuning in. This podcast actually dates back to probably 2005. 2003 is when I started blogging, and 2005 is when I had set up the speedofcreativity.org website. So anyway, lots of podcasts on the channel, and certainly less frequent podcast posts here, but I hope you'll find today's session helpful. This session, I'm not exactly sure what I'm going to call it. Probably something like learning about cybersecurity, coding, media, and projection, because those are some of the topics that I want to talk about. But I am fresh from a wonderful conference in Burbank, California. And yesterday I had an opportunity to share some thoughts with members of our technology team at school. And I actually put together a little slideshow to share those. And I will put that in the podcast show notes, along with links to some of the other resources and websites that I reference. So just as a little overview, if you haven't listened to the podcast before or you haven't listened in a while, my role is now that of technology director at the Cassidy School here in Northwest Oklahoma City. And I am in my second year as the director of technology. We are a very small shop, as it were, for technology departments. We have 2.5 folks dedicated to full-time technology support. However, we have a larger team that includes our library media specialists and some lead teachers in each of our divisions. But we're a school of about 915 students in pre-K through 12th grade. We've got about 170 faculty and staff. And I have really, really enjoyed the opportunity to shift into the technology director role. After completing my doctorate in 2011, I did some instructional coaching and went back in the classroom, actually, for a couple years teaching 4th and 5th grade STEM. And just really am so thankful for the things I get to do on a daily basis and the relationships I get to build with teachers and the ways in which we're able to work together as a team, doing quite a bit of technical decision making and networking and implementation, but also instructional, because we don't have a separate educational technology or academic technology division. So I'll mention, actually, before I go into the conference highlights, wow, one of the highlights of the year for me was definitely surviving and succeeding in a pretty big test. We had over 3,000 students and teachers come to our campus about 3 weeks ago for the ISAS Arts Festival, which was in its 50th year, and this is an annual gathering of students, high school students, from around the Southwest and our conference, which is called ISAS. And we were the first school to actually host it, and so we hosted the 50th edition of this. But we were definitely ramping up on the networking and Wi-Fi side, and thanks to a generous donation from Cox Communications, increased our downstream bandwidth from 300 megabits per second to 1,300 megabits per second, or 1.3 gigabits, which is a huge jump for us, and ended up either upgrading or installing new about 13 or 14 different access points. And we had a huge dining tent and areas in our field hockey and athletic fields where students were, and we had 10 food trucks on campus and all these different areas where folks were gathering. So anyway, that was exciting, and a shout out to Cisco Meraki. We have a Meraki wired and wireless network, and it worked great. A little side note I'll mention is we did have some debate on, you know, what should we block, you know, Netflix? Should we limit how much bandwidth, you know, guest users have? And we did end up having a block on Netflix, but allowing YouTube, but we ended up throttling down people's individual connections to 5 megabits per second. And so that meant that when people ran a speed test on our network, it didn't look quite as impressive as it could if they were, you know, on the full-fledged network that was not throttled. But Meraki is a wonderful platform. It actually came out of MIT with some students that had wanted to create a mesh network that joined their apartment complexes off campus back onto main campus. So it's all cloud managed, and you don't have to go get an advanced certificate in networking in order to do quite a few, you know, very handy and fairly sophisticated things in terms of managing the network. So anyway, with that stated, I'd like to share some highlights from the Atlas 2017 conference. And as I said, I just came back from this on Wednesday night. Atlas is the Association of Technology Leaders in Independent Schools. You can find them at theatlis, theatlis.org. And I really consider this to be, at this point, my favorite technology conference for several reasons. Number one is just the size and the feel and the networking opportunities that it provides. You know, I'll be heading down to San Antonio at the end of June, along with thousands of other educators, to attend the ISTE conference. And ISTE, it has its own benefits in its own way, and it can be a great place to make connections, but it's huge. It's ginormous. And so my favorite conferences in the last few years have actually been the Miami Okay. I just realized that I had forgotten to put airplane mode on my recorder before I started recording, so I may have to actually cut out that pause a little bit. I'm getting distracted now. I was going to think about recording with my iRig HD, but couldn't find the cable that hooks that up to my iPhone, and really just couldn't get the audio to be as good either going into, well, GarageBand was just so complicated, or even Audacity. So I've just got a little lapel microphone plugged into my iPhone, and I'm recording with Ferrite. But one of the things that I usually do when I'm recording audio on my phone is I put it in airplane mode. So sorry for that distraction, that phone call that came in. As I was saying, Miami Device was a fantastic conference. They are rebranding this year, and rebooting the conference, but the other conference that, it's not going to be Miami Device. It has a different name, and I'll put a link to it in the show notes, because it'll be the same time of year. It's that, beginning of November timeframe. The other conference that I've loved so much, and this has been probably over the last maybe even 3 or 4 years, has been the mobile learning conference that Tony Vincent organized with the Arizona K-12 Center. And I had a chance to attend that conference a couple times, and then once go to a conference that Tony has at the beginning, I think it's the beginning of the summer, in a resort there. I think those were in Tucson. Two of them were in Tucson, and I think one of them was in Phoenix. But anyway, again, just a great size, 300 to 400 people and very innovative folks. Great networking and activities, and just super. So I would put Atlas in a similar category as far as the size and the networking dynamics. The thing that was wonderful for me in my current role as a technology director was that there were not only really great deep dive sessions into tech director stuff like cybersecurity, and there was a wonderful session I went to on, you know, segmenting your network and air gaps and VLANs and these different acronyms and terms that I've been working with as a technology director. But there was also great instructional sessions. There were sessions presented by teachers about digital portfolios, about design thinking, about one-to-one learning. So I have shared all of the notes that I took, and this was actually the first time in quite a while that I was able to just fully attend a conference and not present at all. And so that was really fun. But what I ended up doing, and so I could more readily share it back with my team as well as with others, and I've done this a couple times before, is I took my notes in Google Docs. Now, I also shared out on Twitter, and I'll put a link to my tweet nest. I tweeted something like 317 times, I think, about the conference with the conference hashtag. You can access all of those notes on the website wfryer/atlas17. So that's wfryer.me/atlis17. wfryer.me/atlas17. And so that is a folder shared out of Google Drive that includes my notes for each of the 3 days of the conference. And actually for the last day, the fourth day, I put a PDF because I didn't take Google Doc notes that day. I just tweeted. And so I used Storify to archive those. And then also the shared folder from our cybersecurity session. It was called the boot camp shared materials. And I think that's more than just our cybersecurity session, but I went ahead and dropped that in as well. So you can access all of those materials. I will start out, however, sharing what I thought was the best quotation from our opening keynote speaker. And this was Jamie Cassip, who is the chief education evangelist for Google. And I have seen him speak before. He was actually on a panel that my wife was on last summer at the PBS Digital Learning Summit that was held the day before ISTE started in Denver. And I will put a link to this tweet that he has from October 13th. This is his pinned tweet on his website, and I'll embed it in the podcast link as well. But here's what he says in the tweet. He says, students have a tremendous capacity if we give them an opportunity to blow our minds. Need a generation of problem solvers. And then in the infographic or info pic that he has there, he says the following, and this is a big message that he had in his keynote. Don't ask a student what she wants to be when she grows up. Ask her what problem she wants to solve. Then give her the environment to build the knowledge, skills, and abilities she needs to solve that problem. I thought that was great. Thinking about how fast our society is changing, how quickly technology is transforming so many aspects of our lives, that's a fundamental question that we often ask is, what do you want to do? And just like in college, what do you want to major in? And those are things to think about, but thinking about problems that we want to solve is pretty good. So, as I mentioned, you can access all of the notes from my sessions using that shortened link, and you can access those on the podcast show notes. I want to just kind of give you a little brief overview of some of the highlights, because there's a lot of information there. I guess I have notes from 13 different sessions, including the pre-conference workshop that I attended on cybersecurity, and then the ending workshop that was on building a culture of innovation. I'll go ahead and just read the titles of these sessions, and then I'm going to go through some slides that I put together that just kind of summarize a few of the key takeaways, which are projection issues and options, coding and media, and cybersecurity. And so the sessions that I attended included building a mission-driven technology department. It's complicated. What's the right one-to-one device for your school? Pathways to success, supporting school-wide tech initiatives with a transformative PD model. That was great, about instructional coaching. Digital portfolios in the classroom, three models, bulkheads, fire breaks and air gaps, land segregation for safety and security. And you got to put on your propeller hat for that one. But that was the best session that I've been to ever for, you know, networking, security. We were diagramming our networks. We were talking about, you know, different kinds of best practices. There was a lot of good stuff shared from participants as well. Copyright and intellectual property, who owns what teachers and students create in your school? A very thought-provoking and important session that Vinnie Vrotny from the Kincaid School down in Houston shared. Research, Reflect, and Share, Documenting, Design Thinking, and Making, a great session by fellow ADE Elaine Wren, and that was the one that gave me the chance to play with the Clips app on the iPhone for the first time. Leveraging EdTech to Transform Teaching and Learning, Resources for Independent Schools from the U.S. Department of Education's Office of Educational Technology. And this was from Susan Bearden, who is a wonderful Florida-based educator now in Washington, D.C., just about to wrap up her year of being a fellow with the Department of Educational Technology, and just had phenomenal resources to share. In fact, with some of these, I think I'm going to end up posting a separate blog post of resources just from those sessions. Susan's particularly was just a wonderful collection of studies and tools and websites. As an example, one of the questions we sometimes ask, whether we're involved in technology support or not, is, you know, how much bandwidth should I be having at school, and do we have enough, and what are other schools, you know, not only having for bandwidth, but what are they paying? And so there was a tool that will help you see in your area, or whatever area you want to look at, you know, how much are schools that are filing for E-rate discounts paying for their bandwidth, and how much, you know, should you have? And there's different organizations, COSIN, and others that have come up with some guidelines for schools with that. And then there was a closing keynote that Tim Fish, of, NAIS shared about innovation and learning trends, discoveries, failures, and the joy of the journey. One of the highlights there, and I'll definitely link this in the show notes and embed it as well, was a video from Acton Academy, which is a new charter school in Austin, Texas, which is very project inquiry based and curiosity driven. And it's so interesting to be in an established school and then have people share these stories about these new schools, right? If you're establishing something new from scratch, I think there's a tremendous amount of freedom and autonomy that gives you to set the norms and help establish the culture. And those things can be more challenging when we, you know, have an established school culture and traditions and personnel and things. So anyway, it was very inspiring though, with all of the choice that students were given, the ways they were empowered, the ways that they were given agency and responsibility for their own learning. Tim had shared just a 3-minute clip of that video during his keynote, but the full thing is about 12 or 13 minutes long, and it's definitely worth your time. My wife, Shelley, after watching that together, I came back to the room that evening and shared that with her and said, that's the kind of school, you know, that I want to teach at, the type of educational culture that I want to be a part of. So anyway, there's a ton there, and I would definitely encourage you to check out the notes and let me know if you end up finding anything beneficial. It's interesting because over time, as I've attended conferences and had a chance to become a digital sharer, which I am a very avid digital sharer for sure, I have moved from, you know, blogging sessions and posting those notes individually to, you know, more tweeting and live tweeting. And that can be great because there's other people at a conference and at an event. I love a great Twitter back channel, you know, in an engaging keynote speech. And we definitely had that both with Jamie Cassip and Tim Fish during the Atlas conference. But, you know, with this one too, I was documenting things in a Google Doc because while it's beneficial to be able to share things out and have people see those as tweets and then also, you know, see and retweet and amplify and like things that people are sharing, that's a little bit more ephemeral, meaning that's sort of here and gone. Storify is a tool that can, you can build a story of tweets, and so you can save those, and I did that for the last workshop day. But anyway, there's some value, I think, in having an actual blog post and, or in this case, a Google Doc, if you're particularly interested in one of these topics. So let's jump into projection issues and options. This might even be a session that I will offer at our upcoming, OTA conference. We've got it's the OTA Encyclomedia. So it's the Oklahoma Technology Association, and then Encyclomedia is the conference they've merged for primarily our librarians and media specialists in Oklahoma that we have in the fall. And just a session about projection, you know, what does projection look like in your classrooms, in your libraries, in your conference and meeting areas? What kinds of affordances and tools are you providing to teachers and presenters so that they can not only be, you know, obviously plugging their laptop in, but so they could be untethered, so they can be wireless, so they're able to move about the room. You know, what is your vision for doing that? And certainly at our school, we have a vision for empowering teachers to not be tethered to their desk or to the back of the room or wherever, you know, the video cable might be connecting. We're doing that primarily through Apple TV. and that works very reliably and wonderfully through our network, I think especially because we have something set up that is called a Bonjour Gateway, and that means that we have a separate virtual LAN or VLAN that we put all of our Apple TVs on, and it segments all that traffic, it cordons it off so that the entire network is not affected by how chatty the Apple TVs are. But it broadcasts the availability of the Apple TVs to our faculty staff wireless network. Anyway, that's been a success story of the last 2 years, but there's a few challenges with that. And one of them is, you know, if you don't have an Apple device, then what do you do? There's a tool called AirParrot, which you can get for a Chromebook that allows you to send your Chrome device, screen content to an AirPlay device. And when I was down in Sao Paulo, Brazil, a little over a year ago in March, I learned from Jack Chris, who's the technology director at the Graded School, which is the school where I presented a STEM workshop. They were using that and bought licenses and were having some success with it. It wasn't, I don't think, streaming audio, but, you know, we have a few Microsoft Surface users, and one of those is our head of school who has a Surface Book. And so I really want to provide, especially in our meeting areas, where our board of trustees meets, I want to provide any presenter who's there, whether they walk in with a laptop that's a Mac, they have a Surface Book from Microsoft, they have a Chromebook, ideally I would like for them to be able to present wirelessly, not only with high quality and high frame rate video and visual, but also with audio if they need to play a video. And so that is a challenge. One of the things I'd learned from some other tech directors there was others have had a lot of trouble with the Microsoft Wireless Display Adapter. We have experimented with that. We have one middle school faculty member, our Latin teacher, who has a Surface Book, and she's had intermittent problems with it cutting out and just not being reliable. So one of the biggest things I learned is that when you use Air Server software and you have a Windows 10 computer that has a compatible wireless cards, you may need to get a different wireless card for it, that can support wireless display for Windows as well as Apple and AirPlay. I am now a fan and listener to the Google Admins podcast coming out of Iowa. I think they call themselves the Giuseppe Admins podcast because now, you know, Google Apps for Education is called G Suite. But anyway, they had mentioned on a previous show a tool called a Projector, which is a $300 appliance device that looks a little bit like an Apple TV, or actually I think it looks a little more like the old wireless router that Apple sold, you know, prior to the tower-based routers that they have now. Anyway, that has not been a success. I was just listening to the Giuseppe Admins podcast yesterday and today, and they've tested it and found trouble, not with the AirPlay side, but with the Microsoft side. And then also with the Chrome side of that. So the other tool, which I heard about, I have not tested this yet. I'm not sure if we will test it. I think the next thing I'm going to be testing is a relatively inexpensive Windows 10 box running in one of our conference rooms, running Air Server software, and then seeing how that does with the Microsoft Windows streaming as well as with the Apple AirPlay streaming. But the other one, and I'll link this in the show notes, is a product called Novo Connect. Now, this is a little bit more expensive. It comes from a European company called Vivitech. So it's vivitek.eu. And this product is called Novo Connect. And so, again, it is marketed as this platform that's going to support multi-protocol streaming. And so you're going to be able to, you know, wirelessly connect, whatever device. Actually, you know what? Yeah, no, I think that's that is it. So we will see, but it was great to be able to talk about these kinds of issues. And like I said, I think this is a session I may end up offering at an upcoming local conference and, you know, maybe offering it at, hopefully whatever independent school conference I end up going to next year, if I'm able to, you know, go to our ISAS technology conference, or, you know, if it works out, I can go to the Atlas conference. Because I think talking about the next generation of projection options and media sharing that we do in our classrooms is important. The last thing I'll say on that note is this gets complicated, especially when you have student devices. Pardon me. This gets complicated, especially when you have student devices that you would like to stream and share to the same screen that you're doing the sharing with from a faculty standpoint. And that has to do with networks and, you know, just how you have things configured. So anyway, if you're interested in talking more about that, please reach out to me on Twitter and I'd be glad to, you know, share other lessons learned or kind of how we progress with that, because I think this is going to be an ongoing journey that will be on to sort of next generation projection in our classrooms. Next topics I'd like to talk about a little bit are coding and media. I had a chance to meet the department chair for the computer science department at Viewpoint School that is in Calabasas, California. They have two tracks for their high school students, one that involved technology and computer science. One involves more of media and media design, and then the second track is a coding track. And we are in the process at our school of creating a computer science department at the high school level, and then we've been looking at the kinds of things that we're introducing students to in our elementary grades and our middle school grades. And so that was a good connection to make. Probably the neatest thing I saw in the vendor area, where I didn't spend a ton of time, but I spent some, was Bloxels, B-L-O-X-E-L-S, Build Your Own Video Games. I have seen these before, but I had a chance to actually play a little bit with the boards. And the board is a black grid that has places to put these essentially cubes. They may be a little more rectangular. They're rectangular prisms. But they're colors. And so you put them in and you can build games, and based on the color of the pixel or the block that you put in is the color of the pixel, whether that's water or land or it's, I don't know, metal, or you're building different things, and you can go in electronically, after you take a picture, for instance, with your iPad, then you're able to go in and color, kind of like in Minecraft, where you'd have different kinds of blocks and decide what you're gonna paint them. But kids can make their own games and design those, and they can even, you know, connect their screens and do multi-level games. Pretty cool. And this is a big shout out for help, or request for help. There is a term, a pedagogical term, for something that's happening in the brain when students are not just virtually coding and creating something that they see on the screen, but they're also seeing a physical manifestation of it. And so I think I've heard Mitch Resnick at the MIT Media Lab and the Lifelong Kindergarten Group talk about this in the context of Scratch, when Scratch software for coding is paired with something like Pico Crickets, Lego WeDo, you know, Lego bricks, or even the Makey Makey. There's something about that physical manifestation. We were talking about that a little bit at the conference, and maybe that is just sort of like thinking mathematically, going from concrete to the abstract. I know one of the people we read in my master's program and pre-service teacher education program was Jerome Bruner, and he talks a lot as far as math, how we need to respect students and their need to move from that concrete to a transitional and finally to an abstract level. Sometimes we just throw them into the abstract. So I don't know if Bruner and mathematics is the right way of situating that, or if there's some other educational theorists that talk about that. But anyway, it's a big deal to be able to have something physically in your hand and then it becomes virtual. The coolest thing we've done, and hopefully we're going to still have time to record a video before school's out with more of the students doing this, was in our seventh grade social studies class. A teacher there had worked with our librarian for the last 2 years on her Roman unit. And so students have designed Roman structures. They took those structures that they designed in Tinkercad. They 3D printed those with the help of our librarian. And then this year we've been able to drop those into Minecraft and then have them explore those in Minecraft and then also record a video that was a narrated screencast of them walking through that. So anyway, that was a bit of a digression from Bloxels, but very interested in coding and those kind of connections to coding. The Clips app, one of the things that Apple announced maybe a month ago or something, was a new free app available for iPhone, the more recent iPhones. And I think you have to run iOS 10.2 or newer. I think we're on iOS 10.3 right now. So it can't be a super old phone. But the Clips app is set up to have a lot of different features to just snap a quick video and then be able to share it, whether that's to Instagram or YouTube, Twitter, or wherever. The neat thing that, pardon me, gosh, I gotta get some water. The neat thing that Elaine Wren, who is the ADE who taught the workshop on design thinking that I attended, she mentioned how it has built-in speech-to-text and accessibility function. So you can record your voice, and the app itself, without any other, you know, assistance other than tapping a little button or icon, will do its best to transcribe everything you've said, and then you can tap again and edit that. So if there's a word that you said that Siri, I guess, is doing this recognition, mistranscribed, you know, you can make a change for it, but then you can put that down, and it's just a very cool way to quickly add voice transcription to a video that you've created. I think we do need to attend more to those accessibility issues. I know for the 5 years that I worked at the College of Education at Texas Tech University, supporting distance learning for our College of Education faculty, I was very attuned to that because of the requirements that we have in public education to provide accessibility. And if someone is visually impaired or hearing impaired, you know, how are they going to be able to effectively learn from this video and from digital content that you're publishing? So I'll put a link to a little goofy example video. And also, huge shout out to Mr. Sam Patterson, okay? If you are not following Sam Patterson on Twitter, just remedy that right now. And Sam is on Twitter, Sam Patui. So it's S-A-M-P-A-T-U-E. And he may be best known as the Puppet Man podcaster. Some time ago, he was working with his elementary kids and learned how magical and powerful puppets can be in helping kids make connections and in also just unleashing their creativity and feeling fearless in their sharing. Had a chance to eat dinner the last night of the conference with Elaine and with Sam as well. They work together at Echo Horizon School, which you can find at just the Twitter handles Echo Horizon. And anyway, Sam had shared the video that was the prompt we used in the workshop where I used Clips. And it was setting up a design thinking challenge to design a car. And so Sam had like 4 or 5 different puppets. And I will include this video in the show notes as well. This is very whimsical. And let me just say, I love creative whimsy. And so this is so fun with the ways that he created these different characters and had him share the little quick scenario about what they needed for their car. And then you chose, you know, which design you were going to go with. And I just did a quick design with pipe cleaners that Elaine had provided. So I'll include that. And this is why I said Atlas was a phenomenal conference, because not only did I learn more about, you know, certificates for SSL, HTTPS inspection, and what's called deep packet inspection, which is something that we are able to do now on our network, and just really technical IT stuff. But, you know, we got the puppet videos and the design thinking and the using, you know, apps like Clips to be able to create this video. I loved that. So we'll include those links. And then the last Sam Patterson related link that I'll mention is something called PyTop and Seed, which is C-E-E-D. And so one of the things I'm going to be learning a little more about in the upcoming weeks is Raspberry Pi, how the Raspberry Pi can interface with Scratch for coding. And this is just something I have not played a lot with. And so I'll include the link to the PyTop, which is essentially a full kit that doesn't just come with a Raspberry Pi, but it comes with the screen and the connectors and everything that you need to do to have a fully, you know, fully functioning computer. It's plug and play ready. And so Sam talked about that as well as toy hacking. He brought this Arlo dinosaur robot from The Good Dinosaur, and showed how he'd been able to hack that and help students do that so that, you know, it could do other things that it didn't originally do in terms of motion and sound. There is a great post that our friend Lucy, who's Tech Savvy Girl on Twitter, she's the founder of Create, Make, and Learn, a phenomenal STEM and maker conference that happens every summer up in Burlington, Vermont. And this is a post called Marches for Making, Makerspace is Unconference Learning. I'll include a link to this in the show notes, which tells a lot of, more about toy hacking, and it was actually a little unconference opportunity to for Sam to teach about Open Arlo and Lucy with toy hacking that they had at the Q conference in California. So we'll include those links in the show notes for your additional consumption. All right, let's talk a little bit about cybersecurity, and then I better wrap this up. I think Ferrite only lets me record for an hour, and I guess we've been going about 35 minutes here, but opening workshop at Atlas for me was a workshop on cybersecurity. And one of the biggest takeaways is that when we talk about cybersecurity in the IT realm, what we're really talking about is risk management. You know, we are all at risk for having our information, our networks, the systems that we use electronically, for those being compromised, whether that's someone installing malware or something that's going to be using our processing systems, you know, as part of a botnet, or it's, you know, actually getting student information, or other kinds of private or secret information, ransomware attacks where, you know, things are being locked up and schools are being, you know, essentially extorted to pay up or else you can't get your data back. All of these things involve risk management. And so there's a really nice, suggested process that schools and other organizations can go through for identifying, you know, what are the biggest threat vectors, the biggest places probably where you think you're at risk, you know, where you're going to spend your time and your money trying to address these. Without a doubt today in schools, our biggest threat vector is email when it comes to cybersecurity, and especially with phishing. Here's a vocabulary term for you if you don't know what it is, a spear phishing attack, all right? When we say a phishing attack, I'm not talking about F-I-S-H. We're talking P-H-I-S-H, phishing, where someone is sending an email that they are hoping will trick you into clicking a link and then possibly also putting in your credentials. One of the stories from about a year ago I heard from one of our other independent school tech directors involved a spear phishing attack. And spear phishing is when you're targeted. It's not just something like, hey, you know, send money to me in Nigeria, and it's sent to everybody, but it's specifically sent to your school. And this is a school where somebody had created an email that looked exactly like a shared Google document, a Google Drive document. And when you clicked on it, you know, to see this shared document, it pops up and asks you to log in. But it's actually not having you log in to Google. It's this separate website, and they're doing that to get the Google account credentials. And then once they have those credentials, then they can jump in and, you know, access the rest of your, you know, anything else that that user has access to. Let me remind folks, and you, if you've listened to the EdTech Situation Room, you may be tired of hearing me talk about cybersecurity and these issues, but, you know, both Colin Powell, former Secretary of State of the United States and former Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff of the United States, and John Podesta, who at the time was the Chairman of the Democratic National Committee for the Democratic Party in the United States, they were both, during our 2016 election cycle, the victims of phishing attacks where they clicked something that was not a legitimate link and that either installed something on their computer system or it actually gave these hackers access to their email accounts and everything else that was attached to them. So the cybersecurity workshop gave me strong affirmation that we are on the right track at our school with our plan, which I just announced about a month ago, I guess, to have everyone move to two-step verification for their email. We are a Google Apps for Education or a G Suite school. I think we've been about 6 years with Google. And one of the things that you can do as the Google Suite administrator, pardon me, is you can turn on the option to have two-step verification. And that means that you need to have your cell phone, basically, and receive a text message, respond to that, or you can use an authenticator app. But you have got to physically have possession of that in order to access your account from a new device. And that will hopefully prevent people who, you know, are in other countries and other places who might even have your username and password from being able to do so on a new computer because you have this two-step enabled. One of the things that I took away from this workshop is that there are certain people probably in the business office of your school that you need to have on two-step right away. So we are doing a phased in approach where we've turned it on optionally. We're asking people to sign up. But then we're going to have a point at which we're going to be requiring everyone to do that. But we may be accelerating the speed with which we'll be doing that with our business office. Another huge thing I took away is how important it is to do local phishing tests. And, you know, you may end up working with a side company to do this. And I think that's what we're going to be ended up, I think that's what we will end up doing. But this is an email that is sent to your users that, again, looks like a legitimate email and you're waiting to see how many people are going to click on it. Now, I don't know how many folks from our school will be listening to this, and I don't know for sure, number one, if we're going to even do it, right? Because this is something I'll be talking to our administrators and getting approval to do. But it's very valuable to have local data to say, you know, we sent this out and, you know, this percent of folks, you know, at this level in this department or whatever, you know, clicked on it. One of the things that I didn't realize and I should have known is in addition to reporting spam, you can now report phishing inside Gmail. So one of the things some schools have seen, as especially they're educating their faculty and staff and talking about this, is that the incidence of clicking on these emails go down because their users start to report them as phishing. And so, you know, it ends up being actually deleted from people's email boxes, and so not everybody even sees, you know, these emails that are being sent. So I'm hopefully going to be able to move forward with a local test to be able to get some data and then also follow up on the education. I've been encouraging our users to use a password manager. LastPass, LastPass, is a free password manager that offers both a browser-based and an app-based way of accessing your passwords. I did hear that some IT departments are using the enterprise version of LastPass to share passwords among their department, and you can, you know, choose who gets to see what. You don't have to give everybody access to everything. And I definitely think that's something we're going to be pursuing. I've been using a Google Doc for myself to keep track of all of these passwords, but a way to efficiently share that with other technology staff, I think, is a really good idea. And so, anyway, those were some takeaways. In addition, the cybersecurity workshop got me thinking about Google Cloud backups. There's Backupify, and I'm trying to think, I have in my notes, what the other one was besides, Backupify. Let's see if I can find it here. Spanning. Spanning is another one, spanning.com, that has backup for G Suite and then Backupify. Basically, your Google Vault, which, you know, will archive all email messages that users have sent for whatever time period you have specified, that is not a backup. That is really an e-discovery tool. And so in order to do restores and things like that, if you think about attacks and phishing and not just phishing, but ransomware and the need to restore data, thinking about having one of those services in place, and several of the schools that were participating in this workshop are using those. Kaspersky was recommended as a very good antivirus, anti-malware software tool. That is what we have moved to at our school for putting that on everybody's machine, not just Apple, not just Microsoft Windows users, but also Mac users. Don't need to do that on the Chrome platform at this point on Chromebooks, but that was good affirmation. And then also thinking about your threats and inside threats to your network, scanning your network. If you've got any students at all who are savvy with technology and computer science and coding, you know, they're probably running programs that scan your network to say, okay, here I am on the guest network, you know, what kinds of servers do I have access to? Printers, other devices, you know, Internet of Things. If they've got access, you know, being logged in as a student, you know, do they have access to other kinds of things? Really, really important today that our networks, whether we're at school or somewhere else, are segmented. And that means that if somebody comes in, plugs a flash drive into a computer, and then releases a virus, a malware, worm, whatever, onto your network, that it's not going to be able to spread to every single computer on your network. It's going to be limited and contained. And so, as a technology director, that's important kinds of stuff for me to think about. And, you know, I've inherited a network design from my predecessors. And that's one of the things that we're looking at is, you know, how our network is segmented and set up. And, you know, when folks are on wireless, what kinds of things do they have access to? And how does that fit in with this wireless projection streaming and things like that? So network segmentation, VLANs, you know, stuff like that. So I would refer you to the notes that I took from the session Bulkheads, Firebreaks, and Air Gaps, LAN Segregation for Safety and Security. And that was presented by James Bologna, who's Director of Technology at the Windward School, and then also Paul Avolio, who is the president of Latitude 34 Technologies. So shout out to both of them. Really a fantastic session, and you can access a lot more information about that on the Google Doc, which again, you can find by going to wfryer.me/Atlas17, A-T-L-I-S-1-7. Just a couple of final comments. Was able to enjoy and benefit from 2 hours of a workshop that, well, no, that's a different one. I was about to talk about the end of the day. Well, I will do that, and then I'll go back. Crafting a culture of innovation. This was a fantastic workshop that one of the presenters, Matt Scully, we had video conferenced in with, talking about digital citizenship, and he's at Province Day School, which I think is in North Carolina. Lots of really, really great suggestions and resources there for ways to build your team, ways to build a safe community where we can share and we can collaborate, you know, build and craft a culture of innovation. Just really, really great. And then I think the last thing I'll mention is I went to Peter Estacio and Jim Puccetti's session called Pathways to Success, Supporting School-Wide Tech Initiatives with the Transformative PD Model. And this was all about instructional coaching and a fantastic model that they implemented and continue to implement at their school, where they're having tech coaches, certified teachers, come in and work with teachers on their conference in their available time without changing the whole schedule, without, you know, having to move heaven and earth as it takes to many times change a bell schedule and all that at a school, working within the constraints of the current schedule, but finding ways to make the professional development interactive, personal, consistent, specific to questions that different teachers have, solving specific problems, led by a teacher who's used tech themselves, includes lots of repetition, allows teachers to feel that they're heard and they're not put down. Teachers can ask questions in real time. It's hands-on. It's adaptive. It's, you know, supported by folks that are very positive, and has direct applicability, all this stuff. So one of the visions that I have and hope to be able to, with our team, you know, bring forward at our school is this idea of instructional coaching. Yes, using technology and looking at the ways in which technology is blended, but just also looking at learning strategies and the ways in which, you know, students are engaged, the ways that they're learning, they're representing their understanding, the ways that they're also, you know, creating digital portfolios and representing their learning that way. So I talked to our team yesterday about my desire to encourage them to be on Twitter, to use Twitter to build a personal learning network. You know, and some other things that I hope we'll be able to do with retreat time and, a team mission statement and teaching each other and professional development and possibly some conferences that we will host locally involving things that my wife and I have talked about with our digital sharing conference and also continuing the STEM Seeds conference, the STEM Seeds professional development camp, which, didn't do last summer, but the previous 2 summers worked with Amy Leffelholtz out in UConn Public Schools with. So, if you have stayed with me for this podcast, let me know. Please give me a shout-out. You can reach out to me on Twitter at WFryer. You also can, actually, you can find me on Mastodon, which is a new social networking platform that is completely non-commercial and open source. Pretty cool. And if you Google for Mastodon, W. Fryer, Wes Fryer, I wrote a post about that a couple weeks ago. You'll probably be able to find that. I had my Mastodon link in my Twitter profile, but I actually took it down. This is what I'll do. I'll put it in my about.me. So my Twitter profile, the main link that I have is to about.me/W. Fryer. I'll put a link to it there. But my main blog is speedofcreativity.org. That is hopefully where you found this podcast. And I, again, anticipate publishing a few more podcasts as we gear up for the summer. I'm very, very excited about some iPad Media Camps that I'll be leading. This will be the fifth summer of iPad Media Camp. And I'm hoping to do a local one here in the Oklahoma City area in June that I'll be sending out some announcement stuff about soon. But we'll be definitely going right, you know, at the end, actually, of ISTE at the end of June, up to Jackson Hole, Wyoming, with my wife, and our daughters are going to accompany us and sharing an iPad Media Camp up there for Wyoming teachers. So, as I said at the very beginning, I am podcasting on an almost weekly basis with Jason Neifer. Our show is called the EdTech Situation Room. You can find that at edtechsr.com. We take news links from the past week and sometimes older, but generally recent news, and kind of break it down and analyze that from a technology lens and technology standpoint. And you can find all of the links that we talk about and many that we don't have time for at edtechsr.com/links. We're on YouTube Live, and generally, unless we're adjusting our time for a special guest, that happens at, let's see if I can get this right, 10 p.m. Eastern, 9 p.m. Central, 8 p.m. Mountain, or 7 p.m. Pacific, depending upon where you are if you're in North America. And we have some international guests that sometimes join us. We've had folks from from Tegucigalpa, which is in Honduras, and then we've also had someone from Australia down in Tasmania join us. So that is pretty cool to be able to reach out to folks all over the world. So thank you so much for listening to Moving at the Speed of Creativity. I want to encourage you to remain connected, remain motivated, and also remain safe and secure, right? There are important conversations that we need to be having, not only with teachers and administrators that we work with and students, but also our families, right? As we become more and more a digital society, there is more crime and more malicious activities that people can engage in, you know, using digital tools. And so it behooves all of us to back up our stuff, to have secure passwords, and to be following secure computing practices like two-step verification wherever we can. So thank you so much. Have a great afternoon, evening, morning, wherever it is, whatever time it happens to be. And until next time, this is Wes Fryer with Moving at the Speed of Creativity.
Moving at the Speed of Creativity podcasts are independently produced by Wesley Fryer and are licensed under a Creative Commons Attribution Only license. Learn more at www.speedofcreativity.org.